Morning, everyone. One of the things that I did when I was designing my schedule for this conference was to do a search on nitrate leaching because I wanted to see other studies where people are studying nitrate leaching. I found 66 presentations. Almost all of those were either in irrigated systems or in more humid systems. For those of you who have worked on nitrate leaching, you probably know it's hard. It's hard to capture what's below the root zone. It's hard to do nitrogen budgets. Now that I've done a study on nitrate leaching, I recognize that it's even more challenging to study nitrate leaching in semi-arid dryland systems. I did want to recognize the other people who helped with this project. Andrew John was the master's student on this work, and he did the bulk of the work I'm going to present. Stephanie Ewing and Adam Sigler were my co-PIs, as well as Douglas Jackson Smith, who is a rural sociologist from Utah State, and was the one who made this project very interdisciplinary and very participatory. Anton Beckerman and Perry Miller are our ag economists and cropping systems specialists. So the Judith River watershed is located in central Montana. The Judith River flows into the Missouri River, which is shown in blue on this map. The Judith River watershed is represented here. All of the red areas show areas where shale is relatively shallow in the watershed, somewhere between 5 and 20 meters below the soil surface. The areas where you can probably barely see the land use under there, a lot of rectangles, these are areas where gravel sits above the shale. So these are the most vulnerable areas because the soil is shallow and the groundwater is shallow. The other thing I want to show you is these three areas that are in yellow. These are the three major landforms within this region where we expect nitrate leaching to be high, and this is where we identified collaborating farmers to participate in this research project. This shows a representative soil profile where we only have about 30 centimeters of an A horizon that's relatively rock-free, and then below that we have very high levels of gravel. That gravel layer ranges from about 20 centimeters below the surface to about 1.2 meters below the surface. So very shallow soils are being farmed in this region, which is why we have high levels of nitrate. This graphic shows areas in the watershed that have low levels of nitrate, less than 2 milligrams per liter, 3 to 10 milligrams per liter, and then in dark blue, greater than 10 milligrams per liter, the EPA drinking water standard. So notice that the dark blue areas are these areas that are on the gravel deposits, which are shown in beige. Almost all of the high nitrate levels are in these very unique soils that are very gravelly on top of shale. There's only one long-term monitoring well in the watershed. We call that M1. This graphic shows that from 1994 to 2014, nitrate levels have risen from about 10 milligrams per liter up to about 20 milligrams per liter, low 20 milligrams per liter, so over 20 years. And this is not unique just to the Judith River watershed. The USGS has compiled a lot of data from shallow wells throughout the U.S. and has found that nitrate levels are rising significantly across the U.S., and other people have found that they're rising in many places in the world. So this is a larger project. Other parts of this project involve identifying the nitrogen sources. Where are these high levels of nitrate coming from? Trying to identify what the processes are that are resulting in nitrate leaching. My sub-project objectives were first to determine if alternative management practices affect the quantity of nitrate leached, and determine if alternative management practices affect grain yield, protein, and net revenue. And we specifically called these alternative rather than best because we do not know what the best management practices are. We're just calling these alternative to the grower standard practice. So this shows how participatory our research project was. This is us. This is what we were trying to avoid, working with a bag over our head. And how we did that was we formed a 14-person stakeholder advisory group, including members from the NRCS, a county commissioner, a research center superintendent, a fertilizer dealer, and some producers. We also put together a group that was formed from six producers, where we met with this group about four times per year, the advisory committee once per year. And then we had four or five field days where we presented our results to the public and gathered information from them. At the beginning of this study, we conducted a pre-study survey where we had about a 60% response rate, and we learned what types of practices are farmers using, what types of practices do they think they might use in the future. And we used that survey, and then we worked with the advisory committees to determine what three alternative management practices had the best chance of adoption before we started studying these practices. So these practices included, for example, growing an annual legume, specifically a pea, instead of the traditional practice of summer fallow. We also used a control release urea compared to the conventional practice or the grower standard practice of conventional urea, and we split the nitrogen application in two instead of using a single spring broadcast urea. So all three of these make sense. They should decrease nitrate leaching, but we wanted to find out if they did and what the economic consequences were. This is what one of our fields looked like, where what we have is management boundaries, and we have these fields broken into subfields like A1 and A2 here. The standard practice in this region is winter wheat, followed by barley or spring wheat, followed by fallow. What we did was we asked the grower to, instead of using his standard practice of fallow, to grow pea on one subfield in 2012 and then grow pea on another subfield in 2013. In 2013, he grew winter wheat across this whole field, A1 through A5, and implemented the fertilizer treatment. So controlled release urea, conventional urea, split, and then conventional or single application. In 2014, winter wheat was grown across this entire field, and then this field was again repeated. The fertilizer treatments were repeated, so again, controlled release urea and the split application. So again, this is what one of these management boundaries looked like, with 10 sampling points located on both sides of the boundary, the grower standard practice and the alternative management practice. These X's were located about 15 meters apart, close enough that hopefully soil was relatively similar, and we verified that it was, far enough that we didn't have any sort of edge effect. We collected biomass from both sides of the treatment boundary, and we also collected soil. And this is a unique picture because it shows that the grower was harvesting at the time that we were collecting soil. It required quite a bit of conversation with the growers to make sure that we were there soil sampling right after harvest and that we harvested right before he harvested. So how did we quantify nitrate leaching? We used a nitrogen mass balance approach. These soils, because they were so rocky, made it very difficult to do any sort of, say, soil coring to find out what was below the rocky layer, below the root zone. So, for example, in this nitrogen budget, we know how much nitrogen fertilizer is going down. We know N deposition is relatively small. We know how much nitrogen uptake there was from the crop. The things we didn't know as well were volatilization, but fortunately a colleague of mine, Rick Engel, had been studying volatilization in or near this watershed for about 4 years, so we used his data. We did not know denitrification nor net mineralization. We did know soil nitrate storage because we sampled nitrate at harvest of each year. So our mass balance was leach nitrate equals inputs minus outputs minus the change in soil nitrate levels, with still those two unknowns. So how do we figure out what modeled N mineralization, or what N mineralization minus denitrification, this term within that nitrogen budget that we didn't have a good handle on, how did we estimate that? Well, we did enough soil sampling during fallow periods that we were able to get a good handle on what this net nitrate production or net mineralization minus denitrification equaled. So we had seven what we called subfield periods, ranging from about 6 weeks to 9 months, where we sampled nitrate initially and at the end. And even though it was only seven subfield periods, it represented about 60 different soil sampling soil samples because there was replication within each field. The nice thing about sampling during these fallow periods was no fertilizer was applied, so we assumed volatilization was close to zero. No crop was present, and weed control was very good, so nitrogen uptake was about zero. And we did a water budget on a larger set of subfield periods to find which ones did we think there was no water moving downward. And that's how we identified these seven with a water budget. So the change in soil nitrate, which we called net nitrate production, about equaled the net mineralization minus denitrification. And we then modeled net nitrate production so we could apply it to that nitrogen budget for any period during our study. What we found was that net nitrate production was a function of temperature, volumetric water content, and total nitrogen, total soil nitrogen. Not uncommon to find these three variables affecting nitrogen mineralization and denitrification. So the net nitrate production model verification worked quite well, so we had faith in it. I'm going to skip that one in the interest of time. We then did a mixed effects model, and let's get on to our nitrate leaching results. This shows average predicted nitrate leached on the y-axis and showed no difference between alternative and grower standard practice for our two fertilizer treatments, but there was much higher nitrate leached following fallow than following peas, about 35 kilograms of N per hectare. In 2014, the only difference we found was a slight increase from the controlled release urea, which we don't have an explanation for, compared to conventional urea. Net revenue was the same between each of our treatments in 2013, but in 2014, we saw significantly higher predicted net revenue from our pea winter wheat system than our fallow winter wheat system. So in conclusion, replacing fallow with pea had the best probability of increasing net revenue and decreasing nitrate leaching. Both fertilizer and mineralized nitrogen have a substantial influence on the amount of leached nitrate. Agricultural management practices should focus on reducing deep percolation, which fallow replacement does do and fertilizer treatments do not do. We found both weather differences and depth to rock impacted both nitrate leaching and net revenue. And I'd like to acknowledge all the people that helped with this study. Any questions? Yes. So, yeah, and the grower standard practice was fallow winter wheat, so there was no revenue in that fallow year, but we did get revenue from both the pea and the subsequent winter wheat. Is that what you were asking about? Okay. Yes.
Okay. And also, you had no, was there irrigation?
No, this was all dry land. Yeah. But we still see fairly high levels of nitrate leaching because of these shallow soils. Yes, so in fact, one grower already was growing peas. One, this was the first year that he grew them. He's grown them every year since. And the third adopted peas just this year. So they seem very receptive.
And peas do okay in the dry.
Yeah, we grow 20 to 30 bushels per acre per year, and the revenue on that is similar to the winter wheat that's usually grown there, yes. Yes?
What's the texture of the topsoil?
The texture of the topsoil is a clay loam, so about the highest water holding capacity we could hope for. All right. Yes? Do you have time for one more question or not?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, tillage practices?
All these farmers were no-till, about 80 to 90% in the region are no-till.